Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your texts to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Ben Raby. Ben is the Washington Capitals radio host. Ben, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely. How are you?
Doing very well, Ben. How about yourself?
Doing well.
That's good. Glad to hear it. Ben, brought you on to talk about the Washington Capitals, 9-7-1 to start the year. Sort of a average start to the season for the team. Are they sort of just trying to get their legs underneath them and sort of figure out their new roster thus far, given that they had so many changes in the offseason?
Yeah, a combination of things. We kind of had an idea, even going into the regular season, that might be what we would be looking at in early, mid-November for a number of reasons. Number one, you referenced it, quite a bit of turnover, losing six regulars from last year's lineup, including 60 goals up front, Marcus Johansson, Justin Williams, Daniel Winnick, even up front, those three combining for 60 goals a year ago. So quite a bit of roster turnover, of course. And then you add to that, they began the year in October with 8 of 12 games on the road. So, of course, it all evens out in the end, but the schedule Lakers not exactly doing them any favors off the bat. So we knew it was going to be a challenging first month. And then the third element on top of those things, which we knew going in, has been some injury trouble. Matt Niskanen, having missed the last 12 games now with an upper body injury. Andre Burakovsky will be out until early to mid-December with a fractured thumb. I referenced the offense that left in the offseason. The team was really hoping for a big year from Andre Burakovsky. The fact that he's been sidelined hasn't helped matters. So you throw those three things together, tough schedule to start out, quite a bit of offseason turnover, and then the injuries on top of it, a 9-7-1 record, 17 games into the year, is probably right around where we kind of expected they might be right now.
Ben, if you've watched the Washington Capitals over the last 10 years, you're used to seeing Nicklas Backstrom and Alex Ovechkin on the same line. And this year, as you know, Evgeny Kuznetsov has been centering Alex Ovechkin's line. How would you say that Kuznetsov has done centering the line on a full-time basis early on this year?
Yeah, pretty well. That's good work if you could find it, centering the line with Alex Ovechkin on your left wing. And Evgeny Kuznetsov, as a distributor, has taken advantage of that role. Truthfully, the Capitals would like to see him shoot the puck a little bit more. Perhaps, that influence of Alex Ovechkin on your wing, influencing the way Kuznetsov has played a little bit as far as that puck distribution. They would like him to be a 20-goal scorer of Evgeny Kuznetsov. Barry Trotz even referenced as recently as yesterday, even up to 25 goals is what they would like to see out of Evgeny Kuznetsov. That said, only three goals this year, but quite a few assists. And playing with Alex Ovechkin, it's tough. It sounds like it's easy. It would be easy to play with Alex Ovechkin, but it's demanding, and there's a reason why Nick Backstrom and Ovechkin over the years went through so many right-wingers. It's not always easy to skate with those two, in particular with Alex Ovechkin. But Evgeny Kuznetsov, a month plus into the season, it's his role, and so far so good as far as he's concerned. I think the next step for him, though, is to shoot the puck a little bit more, and in addition to finding Ovechkin and racking up the assists, shoot a little bit more, find the back of the net a little bit more consistently, and still a little bit more in terms of rounding out the 200-foot game and getting a few more defensive side responsibilities.
Ben, since Dmitry Orlov missed the 14-15 season, he played the last 2 years. He played all 82 games for the Caps. Last night, I believe he played his 300th NHL game. How has he looked so far this season?
Yeah, very good, and that's significant for the Capitals because when you consider what they lost in the offseason, Carl Hausner via free agency, Nate Schmidt goes to Vegas via the expansion draft, they lost Kevin Shattenkirk as well, and then the early season injury to Matt Niskanen, it's a pretty thin and depleted blue line compared to what it has been in years past. That being said, Dmitry Orlov is among those now with increased responsibility, signed a new 6-year contract extension in the offseason, He's handled those increased minutes very well. He's seen more time on the penalty kill as well, and that's very important for the Capitals because they really, you know, they need Dmitry Orlov to be an integral piece of the back end moving forward here, as they expect him to be with the six-year deal. But to your point, a guy in Dmitry Orlov who missed the entire 14-15 season, you know, spoke to him a few weeks ago. He acknowledged, he wondered at one point if he was ever going to play again. And for a second-round pick back in 2009 with high expectations, well, that was a tough point in his career. And to your point that he has played all 82 games each of the past two seasons, it's been maybe a little bit of an under-the-radar nice sort of comeback story for Dmitry Orlov, who, you know, doesn't seem to have missed a beat since he's come back from that year-long absence in 2015.
Ben Raby is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ben is the Washington Capitals radio host. Ben, sticking with the back end, of course, being a Winnipeg-based radio show, we have to ask you about a Winnipeg defense or a Capitals defenseman from Winnipeg, former second-round pick Madison Bowie, getting his first taste of NHL action with 11 games so far this year. How has he looked on the Capitals back end so far?
Hey, look. It's an opportunity for him that hasn't been there in years past. The Capitals right now, a rarity in these parts, actually have two rookies on the back end, not only Madison Bowie, but Christian Jukes, the seventh-round pick from 2012 as well. I don't think it was by design they were going to have two rookies in at the same time, but again, with all the offseason departures, and then really it was the Matt Niskanen injury, which opened the door for Madison Bowie. In fact, Niskanen has missed 12 games, and you referenced Bowie has played 11. Bowie came up from AHL Hershey when Niskanen was put on IR. So those moves sort of corresponded with each other. And, no, Madison Bowie has looked solid so far. A couple of initial growing pains, as you might expect from a rookie, but a guy who they've trusted. You know, he's playing, you know, quality minutes, third period. He might be down by a goal. He's offensive-minded. He'll be out there in critical situations with the team trying to mount the comeback. And something the Capitals have been cognizant of as well is Bowie getting some good mentorship. He's been paired primarily with 37-year-old Brooks Orpik, a veteran north of 900 career NHL games. So solid pairing with the stay-at-home veteran and Brooks Orpik and the up-and-coming, you know, good puck-moving type in Madison Bowie. It's been good pair. And 11 games in, he hasn't looked out of place, Madison Bowie. And it'll be interesting in a few weeks, or even within the week, I should say, when Matt Niskanen comes back, and there'll be some roster decisions to be made. But Madison Bowie has certainly shown that he's got a bright NHL future ahead of him.
Ben, the Capitals picked up the big win over the Pittsburgh Penguins last night, 4-1. Is there still the belief in that dressing room that this is the team that they're going to have to beat if they want to go further in the playoffs, even though I don't think the players want to talk about it very often? But we know that the Capitals should be a playoff team this year, and we know that until the Pittsburgh Penguins are knocked off the hill, they're the team to beat.
Yeah, that's certainly understood. I think no matter how the playoff format is or where these teams are in the standings, they always find a way to meet each other in the postseason, right? I think it's like an unwritten rule. The Capitals and Penguins got to meet in postseason play, but no, kidding aside, it's been that way over the past few years. And I think even though Pittsburgh, you know, we're talking about the Capitals maybe off to a slower start than we're used to the Penguins, same could be said with them. Not unlike the Capitals, quite a bit of roster turnover there compared to a year ago. But I think at the end of the day, after the 82-game regular season campaign, we all figure Penguins are certainly going to be the team to beat in the Metropolitan Division. And Capitals, they've been, you know, building their roster for years to kind of go through Pittsburgh. Obviously, hasn't worked to this point, but I think there's an understanding that if you want to get through the Metropolitan Division, probably going to have to go through the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. And I think even after the playoff disappointments of the previous two springs, if the opportunity presented itself one more time, a third year in a row, if you will, they'd be looking forward, they'd be chomping at the bit for one more chance of revenge there.
Ben, after three 50-plus goal seasons in a row, Alexander Ovechkin had 33 last year, and there was talk at the beginning of this season, is he still an elite goal scorer? Well, I think with 13 goals in 17 games, he's shown that he still has that scoring touch. What have you seen from him so far this season?
Yeah, he's impressed. Again, we should put it in context. Those 13 goals, it, you know, was top-heavy at the start of the year with 7 goals in his first 2 games. That has certainly contributed to that high total. But, you know, what we've noticed out of Alex Ovechkin, you know, big emphasis in the offseason from management, from the team, that after a year ago when he was held to a career low 16 goals at even strength, Capitals are hoping for more out of Alex Ovechkin at 5-on-5 this year. The power play goals, his, you know, patented one-timer from the left face-off circle, it's always been there. The thought is that it always will be there. And, you know, he's continued to produce on the power play. But what the Capitals are really hoping for out of Ovechkin this year is that he could contribute a little bit more at even strength at 5-on-5. Again, going back, you know, to bring it back full circle to what I referenced at the start of the conversation, but the 60 goals that left in the offseason via free agency and trade, there really is a thought that Capitals are going to need Alex Ovechkin to have another one of his vintage years here, and obviously he's had the strong start, but what's noteworthy is that 9 of his 13 goals have come at even strength. Again, that's already more than halfway to the total he had a year ago, and you know, the big emphasis is on the even strength play. And real quick, fellas, he did put in, you know, you might ask what's different this year with Alex Ovechkin. There was an emphasis in the offseason that with the way the game is going and as Alex Ovechkin sort of enters the back nine of his career, in order to keep up with the young guns and the speed of the game, there was more of an emphasis in his offseason repertoire training program, if you will, on speed, conditioning, endurance, perhaps a little bit less so of the traditional weightlifting that he's done in years past. So a little bit more of a trimmed-down Alex Ovechkin this year. And, you know, with that emphasis on speed and endurance, you know, he's playing a few more minutes this year as well compared to a year ago. And at least so far, the goals have certainly been there. Again, keeping in mind that 7 of them did come in the first 2 games this year.
Ben, a couple more questions for you. We appreciate your time on this Saturday morning. Braden Holtby last night got his 200th career victory in that win over the Penguins. Second quickest to do it, only behind Hall of Fame goaltender Ken Dryden. How important, how meaningful was it to Braden Holtby to get to that milestone so quickly and be mentioned in the same breath as a legend like Ken Dryden?
He does appreciate that. Braden Holtby is a little bit of a hockey historian. He's read Ken Dryden's book, The Game, and he acknowledged yesterday at the morning skate as he was approaching 200 career games. But to be in that type of company, that's not lost on him. He does appreciate that significance. That being said, you know, he's kind of joking around saying, you know, goaltenders don't grow up dreaming of winning 200 career games. It's a nice milestone and something he appreciated accomplishing yesterday, but obviously has loftier goals in mind, deep postseason runs, Stanley Cup, you know, appearance and perhaps title down the road as well are the ultimate goals for Braden Holtby, but certainly one who appreciates the company he could be in. And that being said, you know, we said on our broadcast last night, it's nice to have those lofty goals. If you're not winning the Stanley Cup on November 10th at home against Pittsburgh, what you could do on November 10th at home against Pittsburgh is earn your 200th career win, and he was able to do that last night. Nice feather in the cap for a guy who, it's easy to forget, had to really work his way to become a full-time NHL number one, had to climb through the organizational depth chart. You know, the Capitals drafted him. He was a fourth-round pick in 2008. He joined an organization that already had Semyon Varlamov as a first-round pick, and Michael Neuvirth is a high second-round pick already in the system. So the odds weren't necessarily in his favor, Braden Holtby, as a teenager, as an 18-, 19-year-old coming through the ranks, but certainly worked his way up the depth chart to emerge not only as the franchise goaltender, but arguably one of the best in the NHL. So a very nice milestone for Braden Holtby last night, certainly.
Ben, last one for you. Barry Trotz, of course, his contract is up at season's end. Any discussion at all about that in the Washington market, or is this just one of those things that's going to play itself out throughout the course of the season?
I missed that for a moment. Did you say John Carlson or Barry Trotz? They both have expiry deals.
I said Barry Trotz, but you can address both of them if you want.
Drew said Barry Carlson, actually.
Just broke up there. No, Barry Trotz is interesting. It is the final year of his deal, to your point, and it's not often a head coach goes into the final year of his contract without being given an extension, but after a second straight premature playoff exit in these parts last summer, head coach Brian McClellan wasn't prepared to hand out an extension. So I don't want to say it is lame duck. That's almost cliche. But, yeah, this is his final year. An extension has not been given to Barry Trotz yet. Brian McClellan acknowledged there are certain things he would like to see from the team this year, and that will determine the long-term future of Barry Trotz. All that being said, you know, again, to bring it back full circle, the deck was stacked against the Capitals a little bit here to start the season. It's a tough position for any head coach, experienced or otherwise, given all the turnover that this team has gone through, given the rookies that are in the lineup this year, not only Bowie and Juice on the back end, but young players, Jacob Ferrana, Chandler Stevenson is now in the lineup, Nathan Walker, a young rookie up front. It's tough hand that Barry Trotz and company have been dealt, but so far they've gotten through the first month plus, and you know, one would think that as the season progresses, the Capitals, a team that as the young players get more comfortable, as the new players in town, Devontae Smith-Pelly, Alex Chiasson, for example, if they get better acclimated, you know, better days might be ahead for a team which still here at 9-7-1, you know, has held its own through the first month and a half, but certainly something worth monitoring on the status of Barry Trotz between now and the end of the regular season.
Ben Raby is the Washington Capitals radio host. Ben, always appreciate your time. Great insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Drew, you got to plug Ben's book.
Yes, 100 Things Every Washington Capitals Fan Needs to Know.
Actually, I was going to ask a question about the book.
Okay.
I wanted to ask Ben about that, but we'll have to get to it next time.
Okay, Ben, book sales going well. It's fun to be a published author.
It's very good. It's available on a Google search, Capitals fans or any hockey fan. Good anecdotes in there. Great stuff. 100 things Capitals fans should know and do before they die. Give it a Google search. It's on Amazon. You can find it there as well. Appreciate it, fellas. Thank you.
Well, Ben, just quickly, what was the most interesting thing you learned while you were researching for this book?
I'll tell you real quick. And by the way, we're good on the time here. I'm just in a car. We're road tripping this afternoon to New York City, so we're not going anywhere. The most interesting thing I got out of the book, truthfully, fellas, was real quick. I spoke to George McPhee, former GM of the team, of course, and when they hired Bruce Boudreau about 10 years ago this month, November 2007, they hired Bruce Boudreau originally as the interim head coach, and I asked George McPhee, just out of curiosity, did you have anybody in mind if it didn't work out with Bruce? He was hired as an interim. He had no NHL head coaching experience. Was there anybody else in the mix, anybody else on standby? And truthfully, fellas, I thought he was going to say Dale Hunter, who, of course, came on as head coach years later. He did not say Dale Hunter for 2007. He said a name I had never heard associated with the Capitals before, that being Pat Quinn. So imagine for a moment if Bruce Boudreau did not work out as head coach. He said they were all set. Pat Quinn, it was between jobs, between Maple Leafs and Edmonton Oilers. Pat Quinn was out of work. He was looking to get back in the NHL. George McPhee had a previous relationship with Pat Quinn, having worked together in Vancouver, where George McPhee was an assistant GM. So I found it interesting, you know, because we know what happened when Bruce Boudreau came over to D.C. Team took off. Alex Ovechkin, you know, really took his game to another level. The Rock the Red, high-octane offense, it all took off. But imagine for a moment if it didn't work out with Bruce Boudreau in those first few weeks. Pat Quinn, a little stingier, shall we say, than Bruce Boudreau. He could have been the bench boss of those young gun Washington Capitals 10 years ago.
That anecdote and more available in Ben Raby's book, 100 Things Capitals Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Give it a Google search. Available on Amazon and wherever booksellers sell their wares. Ben, appreciate your time. Drive safe. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Appreciate it, fellas. Thank you.
Take care, Ben. When we come back, we discuss the conundrum surrounding goaltender interference. Who knows what it is, when it is. We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. All right.
Because Brown is there. But it looks like they're going to challenge. Brown's going to get himself known. Does he shove the defenseman back? He does.
That's 50-50. They're just tying up there.
But I also think that Budaj is now able to reestablish position.
The review of the play there was goaltender interference on the play. This is no goal.
That is from the Los Angeles Kings broadcast against the Tampa Bay Lightning earlier this week, the confusion surrounding what is or what isn't goaltender interference continues unabated. I'm pretty sure Paul Maurice is still cursing up a storm after Monday night's situation in Dallas. We all read lips on Monday night and saw what the Jets coach had to say about the goaltender interference challenge that they issued that was rejected.
Dave? Well, I asked him about it on Sunday at practice, and I said to him, like, do you wish having had a little time to that you would have challenged the Connor Hellebuyck, you know, the second goal Montreal scored,
yeah,
where he felt it was in his glove, and after the game, Connor Hellebuyck said, that puck was in my glove, like, you know, I just, you know, I happened to be moving up, so as a result, you know, when the guy hit my glove, you know, the puck bounced out, and I said, and Coach Maurice gave me an answer, and he essentially said, after all of kind of, after his kind of, his long answer, he said, I just don't know what it is. And it just seems to be there seems to be a general lack of understanding of what is and what isn't goalie interference right
now.
Well,
here's John Stevens, Los Angeles Kings head coach, after that situation from the Thursday Lightning Kings game that I just played. Quote, I'm totally confused on the goaltender interference penalty. I don't have a clue what's allowed and what's not allowed. If the league wants to put a seminar together, I will attend it because I'm more confused now than I was at the beginning of the year. And I don't know if you guys saw the highlights of that audio we just played. That's not goaltender interference. To me, that's just good, hard, you know, forechecking right around the goal. There's a loose puck there, and Dustin Brown does what's necessary in order to get the puck into the net. I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. That's been a good goal in the world of hockey for so many years, Ezzy.
Well, yeah, and we saw two examples of this against the Dallas Stars at home and on the road, and Remus put together a nice side-by-side video. I don't know if you guys saw that,
yes,
but
I did.
Maybe we'll tweet that out from the Illegal Curve account. I mean, on Monday night, it looked like Jamie Benn, his goal was going to be called back for goalie interference, because last week we saw Mark Scheifele called for goalie interference when it looked like he really didn't interfere with Ben Bishop at all.
Yeah.
So if you actually look at this, and I'll retweet it from my personal account as well, I mean, it looks like a carbon copy of the Mark Scheifele goalie interference call. I believe that was Brandon Tanev's goal, if I'm not mistaken, that got called back.
Yeah.
So right now I think, you know, you have this gray area that's way too big. I mean, sure, there's going to be some gray area, guys, when you're talking about goalie interference, Drew, but as far as I'm concerned, I don't think goalie interference should be a reviewable call. I really don't.
I agree with you.
I think it should be left up to the discretion of the ref.
If they make the call on the ice immediately, if you look at it and review it in super slow motion, it shows 14,000 different ways. There's no way that the reviewing it like that really helps the matter at all. It's a very difficult situation. The NHL needs to really get it done before it costs somebody a real key moment, you know, later on in the year or in the playoffs. When we come back, Marty B. Ron, studio analyst for MSG, TSN, and RDS, is going to join us. And we pause, of course, for Remembrance Day's remembrances at 11 a.m. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Final hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Remembrance Day. Of course, we pay tribute to all those who have served and continue to serve our great country. We thank them for their service. They are responsible for the freedoms that we enjoy. And, you know, we're sitting here obviously broadcasting a hockey show that is insignificant in the grand scheme of things, and you really do get to recalibrate your priorities on a morning like today, and, you know, with an event like Remembrance Day. So once again, we thank all those who serve and continue to serve our great country. Going to be joined by Marty B. Ron, goaltender, or former goaltender, now analyst. He's trying to get him online in the next couple minutes. So lots to talk about in terms of the goaltending world. I want to get Marty's perspective on Connor Hellebuck's really increased player and his impressive play thus far this season. So I think we have Marty on the line, so let's head to the hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He's a very good friend of the program. You know him as an analyst on Buffalo Sabres broadcast. You know him from TSN and RDS. Marty B. Ron joins the program. Marty, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, although it's just about good afternoon for us here in the Eastern time zone. But, it's a good day anyhow.
There you go. That is always a good day when we're able to talk with you, Marty. Obviously brought you on. We'll, you know, take a look around the NHL, look at some goaltending situations, some goaltending issues. Want to start here in Winnipeg with Connor Hellebuyck. And I'm sure, as you know, Marty, the Jets brought in Steve Mason in the offseason, presumably to be the new number one goaltender for the team. Mason struggled able to start the year. Connor Hellebuck has been absolutely incredible most nights for the Winnipeg Jets. A bit of an off night last night. But, you know, how have you seen Connor Hellebuck this year? What have you seen out of his game that can attribute his impressive play after what was a bit of a struggle for him during his rookie year?
You know what? He's played really solid. He's kept it simple. I don't think that we're asking Connor Hellebuck to do new things this year. We've seen how good of a goalie he can be over the last couple of seasons. It just was a matter of putting it all together. And maybe the fact that they brought in Steve Mason kind of lowered the expectation, or maybe the self-imposed expectation that Connor Hellebuck may have put on himself. Maybe it was just a... you know, the kick in the behind that he needed to get himself going in a positive way. And I look at him, I think he looks big in the net. And to me, when I look at a goalie, first I always look at what perception, what body language does that goalie give out to the other team. And when you see Conrad Hellebuck in net, he looks big, he looks comfortable. He's almost, you know, telling the shooters, try to beat me. Hey, you don't have anything. And to me, that is a great quality to have as a goaltender when you feel invincible to a certain extent. Now, I love what he said after the game yesterday. He says, listen, I wasn't going to go the whole season 35-0, you know, or whatever it is. At some point, they're going to lose games. And, you know, most teams have been victimized in Vegas. Maybe the fact that it's a new arena, a new feeling, a new team, new environment, it's a little bit tougher to adjust for teams. Maybe it's just that the slot machines are open 24 hours. I'm not sure right now, but I think that when you look at it, it's good. You know what? We move on. We lost the game, we move on, and I think his comments were exactly what I would want to hear from him. I think there's some maturity that's coming into play with him right now. Where I remember last year he made a comment that he thought he was playing better in December than he did in October. But you look at the stats and you look at the numbers, they were saying something completely different. So I thought that was, you know, a weird comment for him to make last year, and I think that now I'm seeing some maturity, which is excellent to see.
Marty, the Sabres obviously haven't got off to a good start, you know, early on this season. Are you concerned with Robin Lehner's play, and have you seen anything different out of his game this year as compared to last year?
I'm not going to say that I'm concerned with Robin Lehner's play because I think Robin is a very good goaltender. Now, do I think he's a top 15, a top 20 goaltenders in the National Hockey League? No, I don't. I think that for Robin Lehner to be successful, it has to look very difficult. It has to look like where he's diving, he's making saves that are really spectacular, but they're not going to be the saves that are really going to, you know, stand out when you look at a Carey Price and you look at a Brandon Woody, you look at a Devin Dubnyk, you look at those goaltenders, they make things look easy. With Robin, he makes things look hard. So to me, that is something that he'll always have to fight. Obviously, he's a more of an acrobatic type goaltender, a little bit old school, where we've seen him against Washington on Tuesday night. He threw in the two-pad stack across. He made a save on Radim Gorbata last night. If Florida was in town, where he just threw his legs backwards in the breakaway. I mean, those are not the typical saves you're going to see. So it is going to be a battle for Robin to be able to play with that style at that level for, you know, 60-plus games as a number one goaltender. I don't think you can sustain that. And the goalie now are so much about their structure, their technical elements, making small movements, staying square to the play, and he's completely the opposite of that. So right now, for the Buffalo Sabres, it's not Robin Lehner that's worrying me. It's a lot of other things. Number one, their defense is completely decimated. They got, you know, they're three of their top six defensemen on the injured reserve list. You know, they're not getting any production. It's very difficult, and there's still some guys up front that are not performing, and that, you know, that is a bigger issue with the Sabres.
Marty, I want to go back to the Jets because I'm curious about the mentality of Steve Mason. You know, he was brought in theory to be the number one goaltender here in Winnipeg, and he talked early on in the season about getting a lot of starts and kind of liking getting a heavy load. And, you know, of course, now he's had this kind of take a backseat to Connor Hellebuck. He's in the net for Arizona tonight. I mean, against Arizona tomorrow night. How much pressure do you think there is on Steve Mason to have a big performance tomorrow?
Well, I mean, obviously, Mason, and there's also pressure on the Winnipeg Jets to give Steve Mason some support and to make him feel better. Listen, as a team, as an organization, especially when you bring a new goaltender in, and in for a couple of years at the price that they're going to pay Steve Mason, you want him to be able to give you results and to perform. Now, do I think it was a good signing for the Jets to look at Steve Mason? Yeah, I think that the Jets tried to stay within their organization the last year or so with Hellebuyck and with Hutchinson and Pavlik, and it didn't work. So they wanted to do something that they hadn't tried yet, and so I'm not going to fault them for that. The goalie market last year, when you look at Brandon Elliott and Mike Smith moving and Ben Bishop moving, and it was all over the place, but I don't think there were some marquee guys out there, so Steve Mason was maybe one of the best options. But, I'm always very careful when you trade for a goaltender and you sign a goaltender to free agency. That's because somebody didn't want that goalie anymore, and there's got to be some reasons for that. And so I'm always very careful. I think the best goaltenders in the National Hockey League are the guys that are developed within the organization, and they stay with the organization because the teams believe that they can go great places. You know what? If Philly had thought that Steve Mason was going to take him to great places, he'd still be in Philadelphia. Same to be said for Brian Elliott and other guys. So that's why it's hard to trade or sign a free agent goalie.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Marty, if you're a fan of the Montreal Canadiens, if you're a fan of Carey Price, on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you with his performance thus far this year?
I'm concerned because I think that when you look at Carey Price, usually it's always about great structure, great calmness in his game, and he's very, you know what, give me a second.
Alrighty, Marty's going to take a second.
No, because my kids are like running around the house, and they're looking. I can see the panic on my 9-year-old daughter's like, "Where is my sister? My 7-year-old sister?" And she's sitting with me in the car as we're doing this, so I can see that they were panicking outside right now. Go back. You look at Carey Price and you say, "Okay, what's been the key for Carey Price over the last few years?" It's always been his calmness, his ability to stand above all the pressure, all that the expectation, and you haven't seen that this year. Where he's usually shown confidence, sometimes it's leaked into more nonchalance, more being more the casual goaltender, but on a negative side. And we've seen that out of Carey Price earlier this year. He's fighting through traffic. He doesn't fight for rebounds. There could be some, obviously now he had a minor injury, so there could be something that was bugging him. He tried going back to the same thing. Same thing happened last season. He went to the new goalie skates, the skates that don't have the cowling, and now the last few days on the ice, he reverted back to having his cowling, his goalie skates that are more old-school goaltending. So there's not only some physical things, I think there's some mental things that are coming into play right now that are affecting why Carey Price has not been what Carey Price is usually all about.
You know, Marty, just going back to the Buffalo Sabres for a second, Winnipeg Jets fans are always curious to see how Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian are doing. Evander Kane's off to a great start. He's already got 9 goals. Zach Bogosian's yet to play a regular season game with that lower body injury. Do we have any idea when he's going to come back to the lineup?
I am completely puzzled with this injury with Zach Bogosian, and it's unfortunate because one of the best defensemen for the Sabres in preseason, he was paired with Nathan Beaulieu, which the Sabres got from the Montreal Canadiens. Those two played extremely well together, and the third period of the last preseason game, nothing happened, really. I watched all of his shifts again. He just, had a shift like normal. He went back to the bench, retreated to the locker room, and that was it. And, when talking with Zach in the locker room after, when I see him around, it doesn't seem like it's 1 week away or 2 weeks away. It seems like it's going to be a lot longer than that, which is unfortunate because we know that Greg Bogosian has not been the healthiest of players around the National Hockey League. And now to start the season and missing 15, 20, 25, maybe 30 games, that's just tough. That's tough for Zach. That's tough for the team. So that is a very unfortunate situation for Zach and the Sabres. And for Evander Kane, he's playing really well. He's relaxed a lot. The expectations are that, you know, you've got Jack Eichel and you've got Ryan O'Reilly and you've got Kyle Posse. And so Evander Kane is not trying to be the superstar. He's not trying to be the hero. He's trying to do his own thing. He's shooting a lot of the, as he always does, he's shooting, taking a lot of shots, but he's taken a little bit more quality shots this year. He was in the top 15, I think, in the National Hockey League with shots from the inner slot. When you look at the analytics of things, and that's usually not Evander Kane. Evander Kane takes a lot of shots from the outside. Well, this year he's trying to get more to the middle. And TSN put him number one on the trade bait list, right? So an expiring contract, a UFA at the end of the season on a Sabres team that may not, well, it looks like, will not compete for playoffs. He may be a hot commodity for our team down the stretch.
Marty, you know, we're 16 games into the season for Buffalo, and they're last right now in the Eastern Conference. How would you evaluate Phil Housley's coaching start in Buffalo?
You know what? It's been a very up and down roller coaster type of marriage with Phil Housley and the media and Phil Housley and the fans. Everybody thought, wow, this is going to be great because Phil Housley is going to come in and bring in this attitude that Nashville had, especially with their defensemen, the OC, Elvis Subban, you know, all those guys in Nashville. They performed so well. We still don't have a goal from any of our defensemen. Our production from the blue line is very little, if any. So that's not happening. But obviously, you don't have the same players, and you're dealing with injuries, so it's not going to happen. Now, the biggest disconnect, I think, right now with Phil Housley and the media and the fans, maybe, is the fact that they went to Dallas the other day. They got completely blown out of water in the first period. It was 4-0 Dallas after 20 minutes. And after the game, Phil also said, when I evaluate this game, I think we played well. I think we had a good start to the game, and I think we played well. Just a few bad bounces put us behind. And I think that kind of, you know, the red lights were flashing everywhere. The alarm bells were ringing. You know, that's not what anybody else saw, but that's what he was saying. So maybe it's the fact that the coach doesn't want to be too tough on his teams. Maybe he wants to start building this relationship, you know, that the coach is going to be, you know, supporting the players and it's going to be, let's work on this together. Maybe behind closed doors he's seeing something completely different. But that just didn't come across the way that anybody wanted to hear in Buffalo. I mean, they haven't made the playoffs in a long time. The Buffalo Bills have been in a drought for, you know, 16 years or 17 years of no playoff as well. So the fan base here in Buffalo doesn't want a coach that's going to make excuses. They want a coach that's going to hold everybody accountable. So we'll have to see because they responded really well from that. They responded with a great win against Washington, but then they played such a bad game against Florida last night that I really don't know what to expect tonight against the Montreal Canadiens. That's the way it is. So I got to give Phil some more time to get himself really structured in as a head coach. So right now there's been some ups, but there's also been a few downs as well.
Marty, we'll let you go on this last question. If I'm not mistaken, you're scheduled to play in the Hockey Hall of Fame Legends Classic tomorrow afternoon in Toronto. You know, what's it going to be like for you to be on the ice with all these tremendous legends of the game?
You know what, this will be my third time, I think, and over the last few years, it was so exciting to go on the ice. I mean, I've played with guys like Bernie Nichols, Peter Stastny, Lanny McDonald, Daryl Sittler, some of the great legends of the game, right, and some of the great Toronto Maple Leafs legends as well. But somehow this year, they decided they're going to bring a lot of young guys, and they got Brad Richards, Randy Saint-Louis, Tim Solani, Thomas Caberle, Nick Antipolo, they got a lot of young players that have just started playing a year or two ago, I'm really, truly worried. I'm worried that, you know, going coach is not going to really reflect well as to how I'm going to be able to make some saves out there. So it'll be a lot of fun. I always look forward to that event when I get invited. I mean, you look at the class, the Hall of Fame class this year, it's pretty spectacular, and it will be great to be on the ice with some of those guys that I either hated playing against or I looked up to before my career started in the National Hockey League. So, yeah, wish me luck because I think I'm going to need it.
Marty, look out for Andrechuk in front of the net.
You know, I hope so. I hope he's on my team because I played with Dave here in Buffalo, and, man, was he fun to play with. But, yeah, he was a big man then, and he's a bigger man now. So if he parks himself in front of the net, definitely won't be able to see anything.
Marty B. Ron is an analyst for the Buffalo Sabres. You know his work from TSN and RDS. He's one of our favorites. Marty, appreciate your time. We'll let you get back to your kids. Thanks very much for joining us.
They're all out of the car, and they're doing their thing. It's just a moment of panic there for a minute.
Thank you, Marty. Take care.
Thank you, guys.
It's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning dynamic top line of Stamkos, Kucherov, and Namestnikov.
Speaking of Andrechuk.
Yeah, there you go, Tampa Bay Lightning. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Stamkos ahead to Kucherov. He's in on quick alone. Drop into the zone again, beating it out of Killorn. The Stamkos, he scores! The onslaught continues, a fourth goal for the Lightning here in the first 11 and a half minutes. 4-0 Tampa Bay.
They are a juggernaut. That's the Tampa Bay Lightning top line of Steven Stamkos, Nikita Kucherov, and Vladislav Namestnikov, just absolutely tearing things up. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, this segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his last night in town, he's been absolutely tearing it up. Mike Winfield is in town. Two shows tonight. 7:15 and 10 p.m. Also, remember, in case you're looking for something to do for your holiday party, maybe you're in charge, maybe you're on your office social committee, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, a great place to have your holiday party. All the information, rumorscomedyclub.com. Stamkos and Kucherov right now, these guys have such chemistry and such... I mean, they're playing at an otherworldly level right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, if you guys have watched the Tampa Bay Lightning power play this year, it's basically unstoppable. And, you know, Steven Stamkos basically averaging 2 points a game right now. But you forget, Stamkos last year missed the majority of the season. But when he went out with an injury, he was at a point per game clip. And you forget, this is a multiple 50-goal scorer, a guy that scored 60 goals before. But the last couple of years, he just hasn't been at that same level that he was previously with the Tampa Bay Lightning when he was scoring 40 goals a year. And, you know, it's a really exciting team to watch. And we knew that the Tampa Bay Lightning were going to be better this year with a healthy Steven Stamkos. I just didn't think that we would see this level of scoring. But it's by far, in my opinion, the best line in hockey right now. Connor Scheifele and Wheeler would be up there as well. And Vladislav Namestnikov is a guy that over the last few years has been kind of a staple of that third line. But he's a really skilled player if you've watched the Lightning, even going back to the year that they made it to the Stanley Cup Final. Very skilled player, and he's been a nice complement there. And you go up and down the lineup. We talked about Braden Point a few weeks back. Braden Point's had a great start to the season. Victor Hedman, we know he's a top defenseman in the league. Mikhail Sergachev has been a nice addition in his rookie year. So this line right now, it kind of reminds you guys of the Detroit Red Wings in the late 90s when they were tearing up. That skill level that they have, and you know, this could be a 250-point line this year.
Well, right now, I mean, this team, I mean, this is a number that you don't see very often. This team's averaging 4 goals a game. I mean, that's, you know, nowadays most teams, you know, you score three goals, you expect that you're going to win the game more often than not. The Lightning are so on fire and are clip and are performing so well offensively that they're averaging four goals a game. They really truly are. I mean, to my mind, I think they're the best team in the league right now.
And they're the best team in the league that nobody's really talking about. Nobody really talks about the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, they just went and spanked the Kings 5-2, mm-hmm. And they lead a beatdown on a team that was number one in the Pacific and was kind of,
second half of a back-to-back.
Right.
They played the night earlier in San Jose, blown the Sharks out of the water.
Right.
Then they go down to Los Angeles.
Like, you're expecting a tight game, and instead they just spank the Kings. And again, the Kings are the number one team in the Pacific Division right now, and they've been playing extremely well. And Tampa Bay really just, it's like one of those teams that just nobody seems to talk about, but they really are. I mean, they've got they're outscoring their opponents, as you just touched on, Drew, and they've got the most goals in the Eastern Conference. The only other team that's close to them is the Leafs with 68. Right now, Tampa Bay has 69. But there's teams that are like not even close. So they are just scoring at such a high pace, such a rate. Now, is it sustainable over the course of a full season? We don't know. But let me tell you, this is a fun team to watch, as you just touched on.
Yeah, they're not going to win 75 games this year, Dave. But when you talk about, Tyler Johnson right now is centering the third line. And it's incredible, when you consider that back when the Tampa Bay Lightning were going to the Stanley Cup Final, it was that triplets line that was their top line with Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat, right?
Yeah.
And you've got Andre Palat on the second line with Braden Point centering that line. And Yanni Gourde is the right winger on that line. But really,
Braden Point's averaging a point a game. He's got 17 points. Points in 17 games played, and he's doing it. I mean, this is a guy that's he was a touted draft pick, but he's not doing it on the heels of Stamkos and Kucherov. He's doing it on his own line.
Yeah, and he's a great player. He was a great junior player as well, and you have so much depth up and down the lineup. Chris Kunitz was a great acquisition coming over from the Pittsburgh Penguins. Alex Killorn at times has been in the bottom six. You were used to seeing Alex Killorn as a staple of the top two lines, and up and down the lineup, they're really good. Andre Vasilevsky. These numbers have been really good. We knew that he was going to play more this year with Ben Bishop being traded prior to the trade deadline. But up and down the lineup, guys, I mean, there aren't very many weaknesses when you look at this Lightning team. And, yeah, they're going to lose some more games. They're not going to sustain, the winning percentage that they have right now. But if you look at the Eastern Conference, you'd say that Pittsburgh's an elite team, Columbus is an elite team, and Tampa Bay's right up there.
I think even Tampa Bay might even be, to some extent, a level ahead. You mentioned Vasilevsky in his first real, he's clearly the number one guy in Tampa. He's got a .928 save percentage and a 2.41 goals against average. So when you're leading the league in goals, four, and then you're in the top third of the league in terms of goals against, it is a recipe for success, and the Tampa Bay Lightning certainly have translated that success on the scoreboard, and then Stamkos, Kucherov, and Namestnikov have translated that scoreboard, that success individually, to being one of the best lines, if not the best line, in all of the NHL so far this year.
Yeah, and it's great to see for Stamkos. He's had so many injury problems over the years, and again, it goes back to what I said before. I mean, no one should be surprised that Steven Stamkos, I'm certainly not surprised, former first overall pick. We talked about it. I mean, this guy has been one of the best goal scorers of the last decade. It's really Nikita Kucherov, that seems to be scoring all the goals, but Stamkos certainly is assisting on most of them.
And you just hope that Stamkos can stay healthy through the entirety of the season, because that's been the bugaboo the last number of years.
Right now, if these guys keep on going, are we talking 50 and 50?
Well,
for Kucherov.
Certainly.
I mean, his shooting percentage is like 24%, so it's a little bit high, a little higher than the league average, but
yeah.
I mean, it's something to be talking about, which you didn't think you'd ever talk about in today's NHL.
Certainly not.
I don't know about 50 and 50, but I wouldn't be surprised if he gets closer to 60 the way he's been scoring so far.
Well, there's no reason.
He's that good. I mean, Kucherov really is that good.
He's got the best value contract in the entire NHL, what the Lightning were able to sign him to because of their salary cap structure and everything else. I think Nikita Kucherov is the best value in the NHL right now. When we come back, James Gordon of The Athletic in Ottawa is going to join us, talk about the Senators and their acquisition earlier in the week of Matt Duchene. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Saturday morning on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now,
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from The Athletic in Ottawa, our very good friend James Gordon joins us on the program. James, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. How's it going?
Going very well, James. I appreciate you giving us time on this Saturday morning. Ottawa Senators obviously made the big acquisition earlier in the week. They get Matt Duchene from the Colorado Avalanche in that three-way trade that also included the Nashville Predators. Given the price that they paid, that the Senators paid, how do you think, what were your thoughts about the acquisition of Matt Duchene?
I think that, you know, this is a guy that they had been pursuing for a very long time, obviously. He's a highly respected player by Senators general manager Pierre Dorion. And, they always knew that the cost was never going to be super low to get Matt Duchene in, it's not like he's played poorly, but, not being at the level that he was earlier in his career. And a lot of that is a function of the team that he was playing for in Colorado and in kind of an organization that's been in disarray for a few years now. So I think that Colorado was selling, elite Matt Duchene, and I think the Senators think that Matt Duchene still exists and they wanted him here. So, they were willing to pay a price. It's tough to say now what that price will ultimately be because the Senators gave up, futures and draft picks and all that sort of thing. But I think it's important to remember from Ottawa's perspective that, they wanted Matt Duchene, but they weren't willing to part with any of, their prospects who are considered blue chippers right now. And they even managed to get him without sending any of their kind of second-tier prospects either. They sent picks, and picks can obviously burn you later if you kind of unearth an elite player with them. But at the same time, picks are kind of lottery tickets of varying value when they're sent over, and it depends what you do with them. So at the end of the day, they gave up some draft picks, gave up a high first-round guy who was a conservative pick in Shane Bowers, who they obviously valued highly, but they picked him at the top of the first round. So I don't think the ceiling is expected to be super high on that. So, they get Matt Duchene. They get the best player in the deal, depending on how you feel about Kyle Turris. But I don't think a lot of people dispute the fact that they got the best player in the deal. And they did it without giving up any players that they, any young players that they really valued. So, I'd say for them, I would say this is a deal that works for everybody. I mean, Nashville got the guy they want. Ottawa got the guy they want. Colorado got a bunch of picks. So I want to say it's a win for Ottawa, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the other teams lost. I think it was kind of a win-win-win for everybody in this case.
And James, the players that you're referencing, Thomas Chabot and Colin White, and you touched on, that the Ottawa Senators have been after Matt Duchene for quite some time now. Is that why this trade took so long? Because maybe Joe Sakic was after one of those top-tier Senators prospects?
I think absolutely that's the case. I mean, it's no secret anymore that the guy that Joe Sakic wanted was Thomas Chabot, and the Senators were simply not willing to give him up. They think he's going to be an elite kind of top-pairing guy who can run their offense, much in the mold of Erik Karlsson, obviously not to that level, and he's a different-handed shot, but a guy that they can build a defense core around for many, many years to come. So, that was the guy that Joe Sakic wanted, and it was a non-starter for the Senators, and both sides held firm. I mean, Joe Sakic could have felt a lot of pressure just to move Matt Duchene, just because I'm sure it was very uncomfortable for everybody there. And I know exactly what that's like because I was at the rink the day after all the Kyle Turris rumors started floating around, and that was very uncomfortable for everybody too. So imagine stretching that out over kind of a long, long time, knowing that somebody's on the way out and they just don't know when. And that went on for a long time for Colorado and Matt Duchene. So, I mean, credit to Joe Sakic for not panicking and selling him for pennies on the dollar. It's, again, I think it kind of just worked out for everybody that, that Ottawa was willing to be patient and not give up what they didn't want to give up, and Colorado was patient in waiting for a deal that that worked for them.
James, Winnipeg-based show, have to ask about Winnipegger Mark Stone. Has 8 goals in his last 8 games for the Senators. Seems to be an invaluable piece for the organization. An RFA at the end of this season. What kind of contract do you anticipate him getting from Ottawa, and how have you seen his season kind of come about in the last 8 games?
Well, he's just been outstanding for a long time now. I mean, he, you know, playing in Ottawa, he's a bit of an underrated guy. You know, the players other than Erik Karlsson here don't get a lot of play kind of nationally, but this is a guy who is, you know, probably a top, you know, top 3, maybe top 5 kind of two-way forward in the league. I mean, he's a complete runaway winner of the takeaway awards last year. He gets a lot of turnovers, and that's how the Senators generate offense, is they try to force those turnovers, and Mark Stone is just incredible. I mean, you watch him play and the way he can, you know, use his stick to knock down passes and take pucks off people and create stuff for the Senators is, it's quite something to watch, that I don't think people really sort of get the picture of how good of a player he is. So, you know, as far as contracts go, to me, it's getting more expensive by the day, because he's just gone to another level this season, obviously adding a lot of the goal scoring that he has. And some of that is luck-based. I mean, he's got a very high shooting percentage right now, and you would expect that to come down a little bit. But, you know, I wrote about this recently, and it wouldn't be the first time that a guy goes kind of on a PDO bender for a year and then gets a massive overpay on a contract. But, I mean, Mark Stone's going to get a big contract anyway, because, I mean, to me, he's just one of the real elite wingers in the league.
James Gordon is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. James covers the Ottawa Senators for TheAthletic.com in Ottawa. James, you know, with the Kyle Turris, going back to the Turris-Duchesne trade, I mean, the contract situation we knew was the big hang-up when it came to Kyle Turris. By the sounds of it, he wouldn't consider a 6-year contract from the Senators, yet he eagerly signed a 6-year contract from the Nashville Predators. Why? Like, why wouldn't the, what was going on behind the scenes there that he was so willing to sign that with the Predators, but wouldn't consider that with the Senators?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a bizarre situation, because I think coming into the season, everybody kind of expected that would be a deal that would get done fairly easily, just because, you know, Turris has been with the team a long time, he's a valued member of the team, and did just a ton of stuff in the community, so he's a really popular player here, a really popular guy, and, you know, we kind of got little hints that the contract situation wasn't going great, even at, you know, before the start of the season in training camp, just the way, you know, reading Pierre Dorion's comments and body language, you just got the impression that this was not a contract negotiation that was going well. The funny thing is that, you know, he did go and sign that 6-year deal with Nashville, and then at the availability, Pierre Dorion said, oh, well, you know, they never put a 6-year deal on the table for us, so, you know, I'm as confused as all the fans are. And then Kyle Turris later in the day is doing an availability, and they ask him about it, and he's like, oh, well, Ottawa never put a 6-year deal on the table for me. So very weird situation. You kind of get the impression, just because neither side, it seems like, put very much of an effort to get to that middle ground, that, you know, I don't, for whatever reason, I don't know the reasons quite yet, but to me, I just got the impression that I don't think either side really wanted to get this deal done here that badly, because it doesn't seem like there was a lot of movement from either side.
You know, James, getting back to, you know, some of the other players on the Ottawa Senators, you don't hear a lot about Derek Brassard. He's off to a great start to the season, third on the Senators in scoring, 14 points in 15 games. Is he just carrying his play from last season's playoffs into this year?
For sure, and he's talked a few times actually early this season just about how he feels, you know, more comfortable here, more a part of the team. You know, when you move teams, there's a lot of, you know, not only figuring out the on-ice systems and all that stuff, but also figuring out your place in the locker room and you know, how everybody deals with each other and all that. And you know, he's made a point of saying he feels really good this year. He feels like he's found his place on this team. He understands everything. And part of the reason that Mark Stone is getting all these points right now is because he and Brassard are just a possession machine a lot of nights, and they're, you know, they're Ottawa's first line, basically. And the two of them are such smart players, and they play so well together that they generate a lot. And, you know, Ottawa's got to be pleased with that. I think a lot of people were kind of worried about the Mika Zibanejad deal, and Zibanejad's played really well for the Rangers. But, you know, Brassard has really found his way here, and, you know, he's a legit number one center here now.
James, over in Stockholm yesterday, NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman spoke about the need for the Senators to move into a new home. Is there any news on that front?
There isn't, because it's not kind of like what happened in Edmonton and Calgary, where you get a lot of this kind of public posturing and fighting and kind of public negotiation through the press and that sort of thing. The way it works here is that it's federal government land that they want to build on, and the land is sort of operated by the National Capital Commission, which is a federal department that you know, runs a lot of stuff around here in the capital, and is charged with, you know, making it look nice and making it look like a national capital, and doing some planning around, you know, how to you know, go about that and make it a great capital. And the problem with working with the federal government, obviously, is one, it moves super slow, and two, they keep everything very tight-lipped, and you know, there's a lot of negotiating going on behind the scenes, but there's no leaks, basically, because the Senators know, and all the other applicants who were kind of a part of the process before knew that if you speak out, then it's going to be a big problem. So it's obviously very tight-lipped, and I think it's safe to say, given who the parties are they're dealing with, it's going to be a very long time before this is all sorted out.
James, we'll let you go on this last question, and we always appreciate your time. You know, the Senators add Matt Duchene to the lineup. They're already one of the top-performing teams offensively, you know, third in terms of goals for per game played, with 3.6 goals per game played. Is this team yet again sort of flying under the radar in the Eastern Conference and maybe not getting the credit that they deserve yet again for just how skilled and talented they actually are?
I think that's fair, for sure. You know, no matter what they do and no matter what the record is, you're going to get, because of some of their underlying numbers that aren't so pretty, you will get a lot of people saying that, you know, it's a mirage and they're actually a bad team and yada, yada, yada. You know, the fact of the matter is they do some things to mitigate some of that possession issue. They, you know, they block a lot of shots. They get a lot of offense in transition from playing that 1-3-1 style, which some people call boring, but, you know, these guys are scoring 5 goals a night, so I'm not sure how boring that is. But, you know, it's a team that normally would have gone to the Eastern Conference Final the year before would, I think, get a lot more attention than they do, and especially, you know, now landing one of the kind of marquee names in the NHL. You would expect them to get more attention, but they don't, and I don't think they really care. I mean, if you're playing in this league, you kind of want everybody to underestimate you. Otherwise, the pressure goes up and, you know, you get people coming in trying to beat you every night because you're considered the best. So I think they're happy to kind of fly under the radar here. And the hope is that they can sneak up on everybody again and repeat what they did last season.
James Gordon covers the Ottawa Senators for TheAthletic.com in Ottawa. James, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yep, thanks, guys.
Take care, James. When we come back, one final segment, and I share a horrifying story from my household. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment this Saturday morning here for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. And of course, remember, when the puck drops, Bernstein's Deli is the place to be. They got all the big screen TVs. They have all the games for you on those televisions. It's hashtag hockey night at Bernstein's. That's Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall. So Laura just messaged me, and she said that, you know, her and Aaron were listening to the show at home and looking at some old videos from when Aaron was, you know, younger and a kid. And it's a picture of me with a very thick, bushy beard playing with her. And she looked at the video and pointed at me and said, "Uncle Ezzy."
Oh, God.
That's why it's a horrifying story from my household.
I think it's horrifying for everybody involved in this one.
There's no good coming from that. I'm going to have to shave the beard immediately when I get home and have a severe conversation with my young daughter about...
Yeah, you got to go back to the clean cut.
I got it. That's cut to the quick of a parent.
That's why I'm clean shaven.
Yes, exactly. Anyways, that's going on at the Shea Piles Mindell with Aaron mistaking me for you there, Ezzy. So you can... I don't know if that's something to be complimented about or insulted about, but at least Aaron knows who you are, so you got that to look forward to. Final segment on this Saturday morning. Of course, it's Hockey Hall of Fame weekend. It was the Hockey Hall of Fame game last night in Toronto. And, you know, guys, you know, Timu Solani getting inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame later on tonight in the induction ceremony. The official ceremony goes Monday. You can watch it on TSN. You know, your thoughts on this class, Ezzy, you know, this class of 2017. We know that it's really headlined by Timu and Paul Kariya, and it's so nice to see them and the fun that they're having together again. After, you know, especially Paul Kariya, who's sort of been alienated and away from the game for so long since his career ended too soon with concussions.
Yeah, there's a lot of great players going in. Obviously, here in Winnipeg, you know, it's all about Timu and Paul Kariya, his former linemate. They get to go in together. But, you know, Dave Andrechuk has waited a long time to get into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Mark Recchi has waited a long time. Daniel Goyette, one of the best female hockey players of all time. She's going in this year, so it really is a special class, and every year is different, right? Last year you had Eric Lindros and Sergei Makarov, and next year we expect Marty Brodeur to be a shoe-in to be in the 2018 Hockey Hall of Fame class. But when you think about Solani and Kariya and what they did in a short period of time in Anaheim, it's really nice that they get to go in together, because you haven't heard a lot from Paul Kariya since his playing career ended. And really, to me, that's what we're going to be looking for, those two players. But also Andrechuk had a great long career, 600-plus goals. And Mark Recchi did it for 20-plus years in the NHL. Dave, he was really the model of consistency, winning Stanley Cups. And as we mentioned, you know, Daniel Goyette, Jeremy Jacobs is going to go in as a builder.
Mm-hmm. Claire Drake, who's a university coach in Canada, Mike Babcock and Barry Trotz give him a ton of credit for their coaching careers. So certainly not a household name typically, but in the hockey community, they know a lot about Claire Drake. And then from the media side of things, Cam Cole, who, you know, has covered the world of hockey for so many years, is going to be is being honored. And the late Dave Strader, who of course lost his battle with cancer earlier, just before the season started.
Yeah, that was really special to see his son do the anthem the other night. That was quite amazing.
Did the anthem in Dallas, I believe. Yep. Yeah, so honoring his dad as he's going to get inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame posthumously on Monday night. Dave, you know, as you mentioned, Andrechuk and Recchi, and they sort of have the longevity. Not that Timu doesn't have the longevity, but, you know, they never really did anything in a single season that jumps out to you as, oh, I remember that year for Andrechuk or that year for Recchi. Whereas Timu and Kariya both had those seasons where they were just the most dynamic players in the game. Of course, Timu, the 76 goals, and Paul Kariya during that Ducks, you know, the Ducks heyday, was probably the most creative and most dynamic player in the entire NHL. So sort of two different, obviously all worthy of being inducted, but sort of two different classes and two different styles of player being inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame this week.
Yeah, no, there's no question, but I mean, those are the types of, you can't just have one type of player. The Hockey Hall of Fame doesn't specify, well, you only have to be a flashy, you know, a Timu Solani style player to get into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Obviously, there's different categories and criteria, and those guys, in my mind, would merit, entry into the Hockey Hall of Fame. They're both, you know, have long-standing careers, I mean, Dave Andrzejczyk, Marty Biron was joking about how tough he was in front of the net. I mean, we saw him at the in the Stanley Cup Finals, you know, years ago. I mean, he's just a big man, and Recchi was just a little wrecking ball. I mean, he was just such a good, you know. He was almost like a Brad Marchand, a little thicker, but like that Brad Marchand style, like a smaller player, just a ton of talent. And, you know, I mean, it's special to watch these players, especially guys we grew up watching. You know, it's a sign of age, I guess, a little bit, as the players that you kind of grew up kind of feeding off and watching these guys. You know, Drew, I'm sure you experienced it watching like Syl Apps and Maurice Rocard-Richard in the 40s.
So, you're, you know, that's, you're older than
so
I am.
So now you can understand what Ezzy and I are experiencing.
You're
in
older
this,
than I am, Dave. Just want to reiterate
one more time.
You are older than I am.
But no, it is nice to see these kind of players going into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
And Ezzy, on Wednesday's NHL This Week show, which actually starts at 10 p.m., we'll look at the 2018 class and who could be inducted from the 2018 class.
So yeah, Theo should be in the Hall of Fame.
That's something
that's
we
all
can,
I'm going
to
say.
We can debate that on. We're going to debate that on Wednesday on NHL This Week. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guests. We are joined by James Gordon of TheAthletic.com, Marty Biron. We're joined by Ben Raby, Washington Capitals radio host, Luke Lipinski for the Coyotes, and Terry Koshan of the Toronto Sun. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website, IllegalCurve.com, on TSN1290.ca, and subscribe via podcast. Get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Stay tuned for Manitoba Moose Hockey, and then the Jets and the Coyotes, all coming up today on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
As long as you set the others, the team will be all right.